Jeff Passan was on Writer's Block yesterday, and Jeff Blair asked him a very straightforward question, Shai, that I'll steal from Jeff and throw at you. They're not going to screw this up, are they?
Well, you'd think that ultimately they figure this out, and I have to believe that they do in the end. But, you know, this is baseball. They've gone about their games the usual way, you know, conflict, public manipulation of trying to manipulate the other side in through public leaks and stuff like that. And ultimately, you know, they seem to be on track to do things they always do. It's like, you know, just screwing around playing games right up until there's a deadline that forces them to make a decision at the very end. But there's just too much at stake for both sides. You know, the players can't take essentially a zero on the year. The owners can't let their business sit idle and expect to return with in a year's time without significant damage being done, not knowing what the economic landscape is going to be when they return, because it's no guarantee fans are going to be able to be able to attend games even next year. So, you know, there's just too much incentive ultimately for both sides to find some middle ground. And, you know, just based on their past history, it's understandable that each side would stake out maximalist positions at this point in time.
Hypothetically speaking, Shai, which is always dangerous, a dangerous road to go down, I acknowledge that. If, say, the owners and players had signed a 5 or a 6 year collective bargaining agreement a year ago, and we were very early on into a new CBA, do you think we'd be experiencing the same back and forth between the two sides as we are now, given that a contentious CBA and a negotiation on that is just around the corner?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that there is next to no trust between the sides. You know, the players have only become convinced since they agreed to the current CBA that owners are trying to screw them at every turn, and the events thus far only reinforces that. You know, they agreed to the prorated salaries back in March, and here they are a couple months later, and they're being asked to take even more dramatic salary cuts, and nothing's happened. And you know, the owners have never been transparent with their books, so players hear, oh, we're going to lose $4 billion, and say to themselves, well, if you're going to really lose $4 billion, why are you rushing to stage a season the way that you are? So you put all those factors together, and, you know, of course that there's going to be a lot of conflict about this because there's zero faith. If there was, and then you throw in the fact that there's going to be a CBA negotiation at the end of 2021 into the backdrop, and any decisions you make now are setting precedents for the future, not only for the next CBA negotiation, but, you know, in 2021, if, again, there are no fans or there are restrictions on fan gatherings, you know, owners are going to come to the players again and say, hey, we need another salary cut. And whatever you agree to now becomes the basis of what you need to agree to the next spring. So there's absolutely a lot riding on this, and the CBA is absolutely a factor.
Shai Davidi is our guest. He's Sportsnet's baseball insider and columnist. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It kind of looks, though, like the owners want the players to counter. Do you think this is only just as kind of a starting point for the negotiations? And, you know, all negotiations, it's about leverage. Who do you think has more leverage right now?
Well, that's an interesting question in terms of who has more leverage. You know, the players have gotten some money for this year. You know, there was the roughly $170 million in total that was advanced to players for April and May. So, you know, assuming that they were relatively smart with it, you know, players have gotten a little bit of money to kind of get them through at least part of this year. On the flip side, you know, the owners are just hemorrhaging. Right? Like they've had no revenue. They've had to pay their employees. They've had to pay players. They've had to pay minor leaguers, even though that's in the whole other discussion and certainly not sufficient relative to what their needs are. But they've had a number of expenses and they need to play. And then if you think about what sitting out this year would mean, how that would impact franchise values, which is the golden horse for the owners. There's a pressure point on them, very much so. But I think that right now, you know, the owners have done a nice job of painting the players as greedy in public circles, as unfair as that is. And I think in general, when you get a period of massive economic tumult and mass unemployment, people are going to look at, you know, even a prorated share of the, you know, the major league minimum salary as a windfall for them, and say, hey, get back on the field out there. So I think the players, from a public perception point of view, are always going to have an uphill battle. But I think the stakes are equal to both sides. You know, I mean, the owners have to be scared, completely scared of what might happen if they sit out and then try to return next year when the economic devastation could very well be much worse than it is right now. You know, and the players know that, you know, you lose a year, you're not getting that back in your career. So, you know, I think ultimately that there's enough at stake for both sides that there's incentive to find some common ground.
With Shai Davidi, where will the Blue Jays play their home games, Shai? Assuming, of course, that we have some kind of season in front of empty stadiums.
Well, the answer to that is completely dependent on what happens with the border. As long as the border is closed, the most likely scenario is they're playing their games in Dunedin at the spring training complex there. You know, now, if the border does open up, then the Blue Jays very much want to get back here and play their home games here. And, you know, one thing that I've been trying to get some clarity on, which I haven't been able to at this point, is what happens if, say, you know, you're halfway into a potential season and all of a sudden the border restrictions are lifted. You know, would at that point you Major League Baseball be able to simply transfer the Blue Jays home games from Dunedin to Toronto? Would that create any issues? So I'm still trying to sort through that. I haven't gotten a definitive answer one way or the other there. But, you know, the primary, as long as there's a 14-day quarantine and border restriction in place, you know, the Blue Jays are going to play their home games at Dunedin.
What, how confident are you? Like, has anything changed this week since all of this has kind of come to light for resuming play? Or, like, do you still give it the same percentage that you gave it 2 weeks ago?
You know, I kind of expected this back and forth, right? Like, every CBA negotiation, there's always that roller coaster, right? With one side starting here, one side starting there. And this isn't exactly a CBA negotiation, but essentially it is, because they're talking about money. So, you know, there was bound to be this conflict. I still, as much as I, you know that each side is capable of blowing up a season, I just can't see them in the end ultimately blowing it up, right? And so both sides have to talk a good game. Both sides have to look tough, and, you know, set up their future positions for the future CBA negotiation. But ultimately, you know, I just can't see either side walking away. I mean, maybe I'm just too logic based or whatever, but, you know, I don't buy the owner's numbers that they're going to lose $4 billion. You know, the famous Paul Beeston quote from years ago, I can take a $2 million profit and turn it into a $500,000 loss and get every accountant in the continent to agree with me. You know, I think that's a very telling statement that we should always keep in mind when we hear owners complaining about their finances. And at the same time, you know, I think players realize that there is some hardship on the game. The financial pie isn't what everyone expected it to be. And to get across the board, there's going to have to be a few sacrifices made. So, you know, I don't know that anything's really changed. But, you know, the drama and the rhetoric is what's really built up.
With Shai Davidi, this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Apologies if I should know this, Shai, but I don't. What is your understanding? We know that players who were on active major league rosters last season will get service time this year. And if you're not a 40-man guy who hasn't made his major league debut, you won't. I'm wondering how that would affect, again, we're kind of working off this 82-game hypothetical. Would that at all affect how the Blue Jays intend to use someone like Nate Pearson this year? Because it strikes me an 82-game season, you get him up here and use him for the full year. You might not have to worry about some of those usage limits or performance or innings limits type thing, just because you're playing a truncated season. Would they bring a guy like Pearson up, or would they still be very careful on that front, given that so much here is changed and we're not going to get the full 162 over a 6.5 month period?
Well, I think what's really changed there, the service time, whatever you get at the big league level, is this year, if a season is played, is just prorated over 162 games. So if you play 75% of this season, you get 75% of what you would have gotten over a full season. So there's really no way to manipulate service time this year. But you know, the bigger factor there is that in all likelihood, there's not going to be a meaningful minor leagues this year. Right. So if you want Nate Pearson to develop, I mean, the only place he's going to get innings that matter is going to be at the big league level. And the Blue Jays have to keep his momentum going because they want him to be able to be capable of hauling 200 innings in the future. And he really needed to get into the 130, 140, 150 inning range this year. And at this point, even that's going to be a challenge. So, you know, I fully expect him to be on the big league roster come opening day, if there is an opening day. And in all likelihood, a member of the rotation, and the Blue Jays have to let him go and pitch as much as he can. Because, you know, his development was one of the priorities this year. And in a sense, that's what's going to be interesting for the Blue Jays, because it's not just him. They've got a handful of guys who they have to consider their development and growth. And so they're going to be trying to win at the big league level, but there's probably going to be an element of development for certain players too, to ensure that they may continue to make progress and their growth doesn't get stunted.
Yeah, I don't want to lay too much at Pearson's feet, but Ryu from the left and Pearson from the right, 1-2 in the rotation. I mean, that they stay healthy.
That's interesting.
It looks pretty good.
Over a short season, and then, you know, if you get some semblance of the Matt Shoemaker from last April, mm-hmm. who was terrific, then all of a sudden you got three guys over a shortened season. And then you just need that good half a year that you typically get from Grichuk and Teoscar Hernandez, and all of a sudden you're a pretty interesting club.